After days of walking under the hot sun, hundreds of Central American migrants marching towards the U.S. have been stalled in Mexico's southern state of Oaxaca after attracting the ire of President Donald Trump. Many of the members of this march, or so-called caravan, plan to apply for asylum at the U.S. border, while others will attempt to sneak in. This year marks the fifth such caravan and the largest one yet, organized by a group called Pueblos Sin Fronteras, or People Without Borders.
European markets were caught in a crossfire of concerns over tax and tariffs. Stocks tumbling to more than 0.5% of losses after the open in London, Paris and Frankfurt. Tech worries eclipsing trade, though trade is likely to come back with a sting. Responding to US metals duties, Beijing on Monday slapped tariffs of up to 25% on around $3 billion of US products. The Trump administration is expected to unveil a list of Chinese technology imports for US tariffs later in the week.
An unusual move. CBS plans to make an all-stock bid for media conglomerate Viacom, but sources tell Reuters the offer price for the operator of cable networks such as MTV and Nickelodeon will be below its current market valuation. That suggests the TV broadcasting company sees itself in a superior position in the media world over Viacom, the company it had split from in 2006. CBS also plans to propose that its CEO, Les Moonves, stay in the corner office at least 2 years if a merger goes through.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's April 4th, 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway, and we've got a good broadcast in store for you today. Today with us, it's a mashup of sorts of restaurants and real estate. Doug Roth is going to be here from Playground Hospitality in Chicago, and he's brought a guest. We're going to be talking about restaurants, legal issues, also real estate issues. We will get into our conversation with Doug momentarily, but first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, stock futures are pointing toward a major tumble at the opening bell later this morning as fresh worries about a potential trade war between the U.S. and China weigh on investors. Chinese officials this morning say they plan to impose tariffs up to 25% on 106 American products, such as soybeans. This comes after the Trump administration yesterday gave details on the $50 billion of Chinese goods that the U.S. plans to hit with 25% tariffs, unless Beijing makes a major trade and concession soon. The markets now down more than 1%, approaching almost 2%. Dow futures down 444 points. S&P futures are down 37 points. That's almost 1.5%. NASDAQ futures down 118 points, 1.8% this morning. And around the globe, markets reacting accordingly as well. Everything is negative in Europe. The DAX is off more than 1%, almost 1.5%. The CAC off almost 0.5%. The FTSE in London down 0.5% as well. In Asia, markets are generally mixed, with the Nikkei the only of the markets that are up just a fraction this morning. Everything else down. The Hang Seng down 661 points. The Shanghai is off about 0.25% this morning. Oil is trading at 62.35 cents a barrel. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. Tax cuts, they have produced a windfall of stock dividends. U.S. dividends hit a new record high in the first quarter, even as markets fell, according to the S&P Dow Jones indices. There were no dividend cuts in the S&P for the period, first for the benchmark. According to Howard Silverblatt, a senior analyst at S&P, the number of dividends approaching a record, more than $100 billion, according to the S&P. Again, a new record after the tax cut windfall. You've heard about the buybacks and a few bonuses. Haven't heard much about the bonuses lately or pay raises, but this is now the next chapter, as was predicted, companies and their stock dividends. Front and center this morning, we're going to be talking about real estate and restaurants. And Doug Roth is here. He's the president and CEO of Playground Hospitality. And we'll focus a little bit on real estate and restaurants. But let's bring everybody in first. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
I am so glad to be back. starting a new year and looking forward to what's ahead of us at this point.
I don't know about you, but springtime always makes me hungry.
As it should, because there are a lot of great products out there that are starting to sprout throughout the country and even locally. We're not going to talk about that.
We're going to focus today on the importance of having good sports staff, good right-hand man, and real estate also, too, how important that is and some legal issues in the restaurant business. And you brought with you a guest today, David Stone, founder and principal at Stone Real Estate. I'll let you talk a little bit about David.
Well, one thing that we do in the restaurant business, like most businesses, is try to surround ourselves with great people. If that's not having a great chef, obviously, that we've talked about. But in addition to that, we also need a support team, as you just mentioned. And that support team involves having wonderful legal representation, great accountant, and also in addition to that, or most importantly, when you begin the restaurant business, is having someone who's extremely knowledgeable in the real estate side. I've happened to know David for many, many years, feel he is one of the best, if not the best, in the downtown market, and understanding both restaurants and retail and what's happening today, because as we see in the stock market and as we see on governmental affairs, it's no difference. 2018 is a very unusual market, and I have the right guy here today with us to talk about what's happening.
David, welcome. We're glad you're here with us.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Doug has always told us in our conversations it's location, location, location for restaurants. You would agree?
I would agree with that and fold in a little bit of operations, which Doug can talk about too.
Talk to us about the real estate part of this, though. From the very early going, you're involved with a potential restaurant tour to try to find a place to put the restaurant.
Right. We work both sides of the fence. We represent restaurateurs looking for space, and we represent landlords looking for retail, and in many cases, restaurants as well.
So. Well, if you could give us a sense of the scene right now as you see it.
Over the last 3 years, people who do what I do for a living have been making a living on restaurants because as retail has started to tail down a little bit or become more conservative, restaurants have filled in the gap. What we're seeing, though, starting in January of this year, is restaurants are becoming more conservative and more cautious because the business climate is a little bit different. So all of us have to make a certain adjustment to how restaurant deals are structured, the kind of rents restaurateurs can pay, and the long-term viability of them.
When you say they're being more cautious in terms of expanding or renewing leases or all of the above?
In terms of expanding, yes, for sure. And in terms of what they can pay, what they can afford to pay for rent, what kind of allowance they'll need from the landlord, because that's usually a significant part of a restaurant transaction, at least in the city, in the close-in city.
What are the mistakes that are made in this early going process by potential restaurateurs or even by developers who are bringing in restaurant owners?
Well, I think the main, from a real estate standpoint, the main mistakes restaurateurs make is purely overspending. Too much rent, overprojecting on the sales they can get, not anticipating how hard it is to get started, how much money it costs to get started, and getting over that initial hump. I think everybody optimistically thinks they're going to just hit big in the first month, and it doesn't happen. Chicago's a seasonal city, and climate plays a major issue. You don't want to open in January or February if you can help it. Hmm. But people do.
David, Doug, you've told us many times that this market is a really tight one. We've all seen the closures over recent months of restaurants. How many of those do you think are real estate or legal reasons?
Well, I think both. What we've seen from a real estate standpoint is that we have too many seats in the marketplace, and especially in the River North area, that what you are seeing are an overbuilt situation that is creating less demand for people, as we say, butts in seats. And as a result, when you go through the tough January, February, and March time period, that separates the players and those guys who really know how to operate from those that don't. And you have read about many restaurants that are now moving along and reconcepting. You can see it every day. So it's extremely important from a real estate standpoint not to overbuild, as David just said, to be financially prudent as you start to look at what your concept is. And in addition to that, we look at the legal side of it as well. And the legal side of it is, what type of arrangement do you have with your landlord? Your landlord or your rent that you'll be paying to your landlord is the highest expense that you'll have on your balance sheet. So between that and labor, you have to be very smart on how you move forward with a particular deal. As we say sometimes, and it's said a lot, and not to overuse it, it's the deal that sometimes we don't do is the best deal. And a lot of time what we do with real estate is we fall in love with real estate.
Yeah.
You know, I got to have that property. It's just the fabulous, most terrific piece of property. But it may have hair on the deal, as we say. There may be things about it that aren't necessarily the right practical, very business-minded aspect that you need to look at so that you are able to realistically appraise it versus emotionally appraising what's going on. The other side is what type of relationship do you have with the developer now, or you do have with the landlord? And what's important in that sort of sense is to get someone who can give you good legal advice. And what that necessarily means is how do you negotiate a deal that is going to be something that's going to be favorable, not just today, but it's obviously going to look good 10 to 15 years from now. And I've been down that route before. And it can be, as David knows, because I shared with him some of the angst that I've had over a period of time with a deal that probably wasn't as smart as I should have looked at, but got lucky and was able to bail not so long ago. But in any event, it's, again, I'm stressing, is make sure that you have really highly competent, highly trained individuals around you, and pay those people, because and even if you have a friend, it's fine, but find someone who is going to have your best interests at hand, because if you don't, the recipe, so to speak, is going to be disaster.
And speaking of disaster, David, what are some of the horror stories? I mean, can you think of any off the top of your head, the things that Doug has talked about that have gone bad that are highlighted in your mind?
Well, trying to think of a restaurant that has gone bad quickly.
Well, I think a lot of them are unfortunate. You know,
it can be
slow burns. The undercapitalization is one of the biggest issues that restaurants have. But what happens, and David probably can attest to this too, is that like a marriage, you start out with this great love affair between them, and then as time goes on, like with Grace and others that have happened recently, the love sorts of fades away, and it now becomes War of the Roses, for those that remember the movie.
Yeah, and in the worst case scenario, there's all kinds of things that can happen legally. Before we started the broadcast today, we were talking about intellectual property, how a restaurant operator can get involved in a situation where they eventually lose their name. You know, basically the developer kind of takes over everything.
Well, I know of a couple instances where that's occurred, and actually sat next to someone recently whose husband, his name is not his name on his restaurant. It doesn't happen to be in this city, but is a noted restaurant in New Orleans, and now belongs to actually the developer or the investment company that was behind him. And when they took it to court, which was interesting, there was not enough evidence, which I don't understand, to say that this individual's name has to go with the restaurant and not with the individual. So as a result, he has had, along with his wife, start a whole new company called Pomegranate Hospitality, and developed two new whole restaurants, one in New Orleans and one in Denver, and basically say goodbye to his namesake.
That's a scary story.
Well, unfortunately, he's not the only one. Yeah. And so it's a little bit reminds me, and maybe your audience sort of you can remember these times as well, is when groups that started out, Beach Boys, Beatles, and I know I'm taking this far back, that really didn't have the opportunity to get the royalties off of some of their records, and it went to other people.
Right.
And it's sort of the same type of situation that's happened years later.
We're on with Doug Roth this morning, president and founder of Playground Hospitality in Chicago, and David Stone, founder and principal of Stone Real Estate. We're going to continue our conversation after the news. More on restaurants and real estate.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's InnoMinute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. There's turmoil at the board of Hyperloop One, the futuristic transportation company that looks to move people across states in pods at high speeds. Three of its board directors have been replaced, and another has been arrested on fraud and embezzlement charges unrelated to the company. Hyperloop One is working on a transit system from Chicago to Pittsburgh and recently launched a feasibility study to determine the likelihood of such a project. Security software startup Kina Security, which has offices in San Francisco and Chicago, has raised $25 million in new funding. The startup helps companies determine and remediate cyber risks, and it has raised $50 million to date. And on Thursday, Motorola, Techstar Chicago, and local startup Geobit are sponsoring a forum designed to bring the Chicago tech community together around the issue of gun violence. The event will center around what action is taking place in Illinois and what can be done to help. That's today's InnoMinute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Glad you're here with us for our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. We're doing a deep dive, sort of a mashup, if you will, today about restaurants and real estate. Doug Roth is here. He's the president and founder of Playground Hospitality in Chicago, and he's brought along David Stone, the founder and principal of Stone Real Estate in Chicago. David, I want to begin the segment with you. We've talked about what's hot, what's not. Is the hot place right now for real estate restaurants the Fulton Market in Chicago?
Well, the Fulton Market is the hottest, and that's the one that everybody is watching and people pay attention to it. And every tenant, every restaurant tenant, every retail tenant that's coming into Chicago or is looking to expand at least looks at Fulton Market. It, you know, 25 years ago, names like Giocco and Marché, you know, people remember that were really the hot restaurants there. But in the last 10 years, it's become names like Girl and the Goat. But what has happened is investors have rushed in Fulton Market and paid big dollars for properties, and therefore they need to get big dollars for their rent. And restaurateurs, who are often the first ones in a market used to paying lower rent, are now seeing rents of $70, $80 a square foot, which are very high rents. I mean, that's as high as you get in River North or, you know, not quite Gold Coast, but, you know, that's a very high rent. So I think what's happening is there's a lot of money flowing in there that is going to change the character of the neighborhood a little bit from being the authentic chef-driven, full-service, you know, fine dining experience to perhaps a little bit more institutional, national tenant, national restaurant, which is going to be a challenge to the neighborhood.
Because those are the folks that can pay those rents.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
How is the retail? We've had many reports on this program about how badly retail is doing in some places. How is the negativity around retail impacting restaurants or vice versa?
Well, retail is definitely taking a pause, I think, and it's safe to say it's taking a pause on Fulton Market, it's taking a pause on Michigan Avenue, it's taking a pause in certainly in the suburbs. And restaurants to this point, to 2018, have filled that gap for the most part. I think what we're seeing now, as Doug talks about, there's too many seats. We're seeing too many restaurants now. So there's a bit of a fallout going on, as you've discussed. Now, hopefully, retail will start to come back in a little bit and fill the gap that restaurants have left. And you see people, you know, the Amazons of the world who are blamed for the demise of retail. But in reality, Amazon has four different concepts, retail, brick-and-mortar concepts that they're doing, Whole Foods being one of them. But there are three others who are starting to fill the gap to an extent. They don't get a lot. They get some press for Amazon Books, but there are other concepts they are doing, perhaps curing some of the ills that they may have caused in retail.
Doug, is the situation where you're having to pay these high rents as a restaurant operator, restaurateur, is that going to become negotiable at some point? Because I would imagine if you're in a hot area like this Fulton Market and you don't have any really cool fine dining places, that perhaps you're going to lower your rent just a little to get some of those people to come in. Is that a fair way to describe that or no?
Well, you really have one bite at the apple. And that's sort of at the beginning of the lease negotiations. And if you have a developer who is enamored with a particular restaurateur, a chef, an idea, or a concept, obviously that's the time to play your hand. What I've tried to do when I've negotiated, and again, this is something to think about for your audience who maybe is involved not only in the restaurant business but even in some form of service industry as well, is structure the lease so that the first couple of years are based on giving you somewhat of a break if it's a hard go. meaning the fact is it could be a percentage rent from the time from dollar zero up to a certain dollar amount, which is a very small percentage, so that it gets you a start. And then if you are able to do really well that first year, that you are able to share with the landlord. But it's a way of giving you a jump start without feeling that you have this onerous number over you that you have to meet every month, and that you basically become, instead of a you become indentured to your landlord, as you might your bank. This gives you a little bit more breathing room. So what I'm really saying is, if you can negotiate first couple years a great lease situation that is going to be less pressure on yourself, and also it's extremely expensive, as David knows, that if someone leaves after the first couple of years, and we've talked about numerous times about how this industry has such a huge fallout, that to reconcept, and we're talking about landlord improvement, which is basically the dollars that go in that the landlord puts in to help you build your restaurant. You know, he's just not giving you that for free. He's going to get that back in rent. So what happens is that you have to, no matter how you look at it, your landlord is your partner. And as a result, you need to go and make sure that he also feels comfortable that he is going to have a tenant there for quite some time. So what you want to do is build a relationship in the beginning that is going to be a win-win ultimately. Because he doesn't want to reconcept after 2 years because you've decided to close your doors.
David, on the other side of that coin, and I'll give you an example from my neighborhood. There's a little hole-in-the-wall place that is probably one of the best restaurants in my neighborhood is closing because the landlord has decided that he wants to sell the property and they want to build a new apartment building there. And this is a beloved little restaurant that's just suddenly going away. There's that side of the coin, too, right? When you have a seemingly good relationship, and all of a sudden the landlord says, we want to do something different.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you can't help. A restaurateur can't help that. And that's, you know, I'm a fan of independent restaurants, as opposed to chain restaurants, which I think many people are, particularly in Chicago. But what you'll find is if that landlord can sell that property to a developer who will make, you know, the property be worth 10 times more than it is today, you can't help it. But it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the restaurant business. It's unfortunate for independent restaurateurs.
Is that something that you can, when you're searching out that location for your restaurant, can you see that coming ahead of time if you're looking at the right place?
Often you can. I mean, in a small building, let's say you're going into a small old building and there's a retail space there, often the landlord will realize in the future, in the near future, I'm going to sell this thing to somebody who's going to knock it down. Sometimes you can get a clause as a restaurant operator that you would have the right to go back into the new development. Not very often, but sometimes. It depends how special you are as an operator. But otherwise, you're at risk. It's called the demolition clause, and the landlord can terminate that lease if he intends to knock the building down.
Doug, when stuff goes south like this, when your partnership ends or there's some rough patch, it can become highly publicized. What does this mean for eaters, you and me, people that go to these restaurants? Do we shy away from places like that when they suddenly get negative press?
You just threw me a softball. and so I think, especially as we look at our environment today, both from a macro and global environment all the way down to restaurants here in Chicago, and especially what's happening with instances of harassment and other situations, yes, it's a situation where people are not comfortable on the stories that they're hearing, and as a result, there is a tremendous move away from those environments and those individuals. The gentleman who I'll remain unnamed at this point that was involved with Eataly is divesting himself and all of his restaurants in New York and the rest of the country as well. A gentleman in New Orleans as well is been banished from his restaurants, and it's a situation where people don't necessarily feel comfortable saying, I ate at so-and-so restaurant last night, knowing that someone's reputation at this point is in question. Fair or not fair. But I think it's just a way that people and mentality sort of goes along until the next crisis.
David, you mentioned earlier that we're seeing sort of a a holding pattern for places. Do you think that's going to break sometime soon, or what would, I guess, cause that to break, that dam to break?
I think it will break, yes, in Chicago particularly. There's just so much going on here. There's so much density. There's so much tourism. It will break, but I think slower. My observation is, for instance, Michigan Avenue has been slow. It has been. And Michigan Avenue is our prime retail street. But slowly but surely, Starbucks Roastery, in the Crate and Barrel space, Peter Lick Galleries across the street here, retail is moving south, but slowly. So, you know, in the case of Fulton Market, all those developers and investors who bought in at big prices expected very fast progress, fast leasing. It will lease. It will just lease slower.
Yeah, and we're sitting here at Tribune Tower, which who knows what's going to happen in 6 months or a year. When we're out of the building, when the Tribune's gone from the building and they start building this giant tower in back of us, we have the Apple store right next to us. Is this a prime area?
It's becoming prime. Yeah. I mean, the Apple is very significant. Even Chicago Architecture Foundation going in across the river at 111 East Wacker is driving retail south on Michigan Avenue, which it has never been before. So Apple going here was the first big stake in the ground, but it takes a while. It's just not something that happens instantly.
Doug, as we move into the spring months, the summer months, you mentioned that the first part of the year is rough for restaurants. Have we seen the last of the big closures for now, at least for this year, or do you suspect there'll be more coming?
Well, that would be a little bit like, should I buy Google today, or even worse, Amazon? The problem is that I don't know enough, but I do feel that I can be safe enough in saying it's choppy, and I don't see necessarily smooth air quite yet. I think we have to get into a better weather environment. I think also we have to get an idea of where we're going to be coming in with tourism, and I think that there's a sense, too, of stabilization, again, of how many restaurants open. One thing that's interesting, though, is that one area that we haven't discussed, and we may save it for another visit, is that entry into the restaurant industry can be a lot easier, which I've read a lot about, is through new food court, not food courts, but more food halls that are going in. And it's a way of defraying a lot of the costs. It's a fascinating area that's been around for probably about 300 years, especially in Europe. And we have a couple that are happening here. Denver is on fire with this concept. New York just opened one yesterday, and the lines are you know all the way to Brooklyn. So it's an area, it's a way of getting into the business today in an inexpensive way. I'd like to throw it to David for a second. I don't know how much David has actually worked with some of the new food halls, but it would be one way that if you do have something that's interesting, and I'm even thinking of something at this point that we might do ourselves, to how to make that happen and sort of incubate it through that process.
David, that would be a good way to share the rent, wouldn't it?
It's a good way to share the rent, but it also, you know, food has become an anchor for the image of a building, and you know, particularly in a downtown office building, for instance, the restaurant is the signature of the building. It draws office tenants. It retains office tenants. It makes your lease-up times less. So the value of food is enormous now. So food halls, which I think are endlessly fascinating, you know, we've gone to New York just to do food hall tours to understand what's going on, and I think the most authentic one here is Revival Food Hall at 125 South Clark. They really did it right. Now, you know, the Merchandise Mart's food court has been converted to a food hall. There's another one on Wacker and Wells that is about to open. Everybody's looking at food halls, both from an interest standpoint, but also it solves some problems of sometimes unwieldy big retail space.
David, it's a wonderful meeting you. You've brought another perspective to our conversations we regularly have here with Doug. I have to tell you, as a restaurant person, I'd be scared to death to get into this business based on what you guys say.
I know, Steve, I was going to ask you for money so we could start a concept here, but are you telling me this is not something you're going to, you're not the right guy to ask?
I think maybe Amazon's the better bet at this point. All right, Doug, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for the opportunity to chat with you today, and look forward to our next visit.
Thank you, Steve.
That's David Stone, founder and principal of Stone Real Estate in Chicago. Doug Roth there as well, president and founder of Playground Hospitality. You can learn more about Doug and Playground Hospitality online. PlaygroundHospitality.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are down 552 points after China has retaliated with tariffs on $50 billion of U.S. goods. S&P futures are down nearly 2%. NASDAQ futures are down 2% as well. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the big news in the commodity market yesterday, the wheat market. Wheat futures surged, led by a spike in hard red winter wheat prices after the Department of Agriculture rated the U.S. Plains wheat crop in the worst shape in 16 years. Soybeans and corn rebounded from the prior session's declines on spillover support from wheat and as cold, wet weather in the central part of the United States stoked concerns about spring planting delays. But looking at those closing prices in the wheat trade, the July wheat contract ended the day with a gain of 9.25 cents a bushel at 4.74. July soybeans up 2.5 cents, and July corn up just 0.75 cents. Meanwhile, the livestock trade went just the other way again at the Mercantile Exchange. The June lean hog contract, after dropping limit down on Monday, down another $2 yesterday, $71.65 a hundredweight. The April live cattle contract down 30 cents, but the June contract down $1.20. And it ended the day at $99.62, below 100. And then the April feeder cattle contract lost $1.22. Well, the administration unveiled tariffs on $50 billion worth of Chinese imports yesterday. And as far as I'm looking, it's mostly technology and manufactured goods on that list released yesterday by the Trump administration. That's your money on 720 WGN. Have a great day.
Thanks, Ori. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. The Commerce Department releases factory orders for February today. In other economic and business events, the Institute for Supply Management releases its service sector index for March. We'll also get the Mortgage Banker Association report on mortgage applications. The ADP employment report is due out. A snapshot of the jobs picture, private jobs picture, before we hit the big jobs report on Friday. We'll also see the PMI services index and EIA petroleum status report due out as well. Earnings, one major company on the list that you'll recognize, CarMax. Tomorrow, the trade deficit numbers, and then again on Friday, the jobs report. Just some of the things that could move the markets.